Hi, I'm going to call this meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education meeting to order. The time is 7:31. Publication of notice. In accordance with the provision of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, Laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through public notice on January 8th, 2020. Faxed to three newspapers designated by the board, Hunterdon County Democrat, Hunterdon Review, and Express Times. Posting on the district website, the main bulletin board in the administration offices, and in each Clinton Township school. Faxing to the clerk of Clinton Township. May we have attendance, please?
Ms. Brennan?
Present.
Dr. Brasher?
Here.
Ms. Brooks? Ms. Emery? Ms. Grant?
Here.
Dr. Grantham?
Here.
Mr. Hornick?
Here.
Mrs. Kaltenbach?
Here.
Dr. Rahimaki?
Here.
Thank you. Dr. Grantham, would you mind leading the Pledge of Allegiance for us?
Sure.
Thank you.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Dr. Rahimaki, will you be our process guardian today?
Sure.
Thank you. Hello and good evening. Yes, I would like to call up Troop 80195 to come and present on their topic. You're right up over there.
Junior Troop 80195 from Clinton Township. We're working on our Bronze Award. The Bronze Award is the highest award a Girl Scout Junior can achieve. To achieve the Bronze Award, we have to complete a Take Action Project. A Take Action Project is a chance for girls to partner with others in their community to solve a problem. As Troop 80195, we would like to address the Spruce Run Preschool Library. The following is our proposal on how to help the preschool, Spruce Run Library.
Clinton Township schools were reorganized in 2018, taking the kindergartners and first graders out of Spruce Run School and moving them to Patrick McGarren School. With their move, the majority of the books from the Spruce Run Library were moved as well. This left the preschoolers at Spruce Run with only a couple of shelves of books. After visiting the library of Mrs. Ingram, we also noticed the space did not look comfortable for the students and staff. Proposed solution. Troop 80195 would like to hold a book drive to collect age-appropriate, new, and gently used books to help restock the Spruce Run Library. Included in our drive, we will also be collecting age-appropriate learning materials, including puzzles and blocks. After the books are collected, we would like to reorganize the existing and new books to make them easy for them to find. We would also like to give the library a little makeover, including decorating the bulletin board, sprucing up the shelves, adding more decorations that help stimulate learning and possibly make it a comfy reading corner slash room.
These are the steps involved. Hold a book and item drive to learn as soon as possible. Organize the current and new books. Decorate the library with input from the current administration, Mrs. Alexa Ingram, and staff. Hold a grand reopening for the current preschool students and their families, at which time we will give a tour of the new space. Have a bookmark making station with Brian Simmons.
provide a comfy and cozy environment to make learning fun for all. Potential obstacles. 1. Time constraints. We want to try to have this project complete prior to the end of the current school year. 2. Cost for items not donated, including paint, decorations, etc. 3. Approval from the Board of Education, which is you.
Thank you in advance for your time and consideration. Girl Scout Junior Troop 80195.
Great job, girls.
So this evening, Jennifer Papione and Joanne Hinkle will be presenting some curriculum updates as we're about to approve science and social studies curriculum this evening, or next meeting. We're going to be discussing it tonight.
Okay, tonight we had a PowerPoint presentation, but as you see, technical difficulties here, so we're not to be able to present, we're going to speak to it. We'd like to present departmentalizing fourth grade for next year. Half the load, twice the quality has been the theme of many of our curriculum presentations that we have been attending recently.
Thank you, a sound man.
Does it work? Okay.
Is it working?
All right, as I was saying, half the load, twice the quality is what we've been hearing in a lot of curriculum presentations recently. And what that means is that we're suggesting that we have teams of teachers that teach math and science and social studies in ELA. Data supports that the benefits of semi-departmentalizing model will give increased time spent preparing lessons, focusing on a greater depth of preparation, when focused on two or main subjects instead of 5, 6, or 7, depending on a grade. The MSGP scores for fourth and fifth grade teams also indicate a much stronger performance and ability to advance to students in the semi-departmentalized model that currently exists in fifth grade. Our fifth grade teachers outperform our fourth grade teachers with an average MSGP score of 72.5. Fourth grade has an average of 51. So what that shows us is that fourth grade is doing a year's growth at a year's time, where fifth grade is doing more than a year's growth at a year's time. So in 2020, there have been new standards that have been released. They are in draft form at this time. But because of the new standards, there's going to be an increase in rigor in the proposed standards, which would require more complex instruction and integration as the standards are in review for adoption in both science and social studies. This is an opportune time for us to go to a departmentalized model. The social studies standards that are currently in review are more thoroughly integrated into the ELA curriculum. The new computer science and design thinking standards also require greater integration into all content areas. Departmentalization will allow the teachers to sharpen and enhance their personal technology skills and assist our students in meeting the standards. Benefits to semi-departmentalized team. Teachers will become subject matter experts in ELA and social studies or in math and science. This will allow us to have more focused PLC groups by subject or by teaching team, more focused curriculum meetings, planning devoted to fewer subjects to increase depth and complexity of the subject. Students benefit from different teaching styles, cross-subject integration, ELA with social studies and science with math. There would also be less subs for our professional development days.
Thank you.
Thank you, professional development days would either be ELA-based or math-based. So we would require half the teachers to attend to an ELA meeting and half would go to a math professional development, which would help reduce the subs that were required. Teachers will have a greater ability to differentiate their instruction to meet the needs of all learners when they're focusing on two subjects versus the many subjects they focus on now.
Do you have any
questions?
We currently run the semi-departmentalized model that's very similar to structure in the fifth grade. And we've done that now for about 2 years. And so we had originally had that model running. We moved back from it at one point and then went back to it again. Just to clarify, the MSGP scores that the teachers receive, is the score calculated by student growth? So they take the students and they look at what their growth and achievement has been over the course of an academic year. And they compare it to their peer group, basically. And so what they do is they look at what that level of advancement has been and they apply it in grades 4 through 8, but also in the NELA and average. So when we look at that growth, what we're seeing is that the average of about 51 fourth grade teachers versus 72.5 for the fifth grade teachers, it just shows a much better growth perspective for the students themselves. Part of that is the idea that a teacher in, you know, any of our primary grades now can be planning for as many as 7 subjects in a given day. So in ELA alone, it could be reading, writing, the foundation program, spelling, and onto that, math, science, social studies. It's a lot of prepping in terms of the day. If we team them, then they get a better focus on the areas that they're assigned to. Okay.
Is this something that you would consider rolling down further grades? Or is fourth grade as low as you think you want to take it in terms
right
of grade
now,
level?
We're just looking at fourth grade. It could potentially go down to third grade, but right now for next year we want to look at fourth grade, see how well it works out.
Right, no, I understand that. I just didn't know if this was like a long term of see how it works.
I don't know that in the primary grade it would necessarily be the model of choice.
Okay, I was just curious.
I can see it going down to a third grade, but
okay.
What are the disadvantages of moving fourth graders to this model, or what concerns do you have about trying this?
I would say that in terms of the things that we would have to take a look at would be scheduling. We'd have to make sure that adequate time was given in terms of balance for the content areas. ELA typically requires or eats up more time in a day, but it certainly would allow us to flush out a little science time, which would be really nice. So that's we see that as a big plus. That's really the movement piece is always a consideration, which is why it's tough for primary kids. You lose a lot of learning time when you do a lot of movement. Fourth graders are pretty up to the challenge of moving. So I think it's got more benefits.
And the movement would be more limited with fourth grade since it's two teaching teams. So half the day would be with one teacher, half the day would be with another teacher. It wouldn't be continual swapping throughout the day.
And one of the other benefits is that we have, on our fourth grade team, we're very fortunate that we have teachers that are highly qualified in certain subject areas. So that would give a nice advantage to them. So we would have to go back and see. MSGP is a kind of a quirky thing. If you
So I think maybe you just answered this question, but we have the staffing to actually cover people being subject matter experts, and is there a professional development implication for this change where some teachers would need to be caught up to become those experts?
Mm-hmm. So that's not an issue in terms of that. But what I meant was that we have teachers who are kind of qualified in ELA and math on the working team right now, which is a big deal at the higher grade level. When they're kind of qualified in certification classes, so basically, what it would mean is that not that there's no one, if everyone is qualified to move into this model, what it would mean for we'd only send these three teachers to math PD and science PD, and these three teachers to ELA PD. We'd no longer have anybody in order because everybody going to everything, which requires a lot of subs for the district. But it also pulls your focus away. If I have to do that much less money in a lot of different libraries, to work the semi-compromised model for the last time for you. So would we benefit more from the professional development that I have? Absolutely. Because that would be able to focus.
Any other questions? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask up the chairs of the CTA Negotiations Committee to the podium, please.
Swallow the microphone to get it to pick you up. Excuse me. Should I introduce myself? I'm Jason Hill, band teacher at Round Valley School and co-chair of the Clinton Township Education Association negotiation team. The negotiation teams of the Clinton Township Board of Education and the Clinton Township Education Association are excited to announce that both parties reached a tentative agreement on the evening of March 4th, 2020.
We look forward to meeting again on March 25th, 2020 to develop salary guides and contract language. The final step will be presenting a full agreement to the Board of Education and the CTEA membership for ratification. So we are going to move on to. Okay, now we're going to move on to the first public comment section. If anyone in the audience would like to address the board, please come up to the microphone and state your name and address. Each person will have up to 3 minutes. We will attempt to answer all questions. However, in the event that we are unable to answer them immediately, we will follow up with answers. This comment section will be limited to 30 minutes. Seeing none, we'll move on to the report of the school business administrator.
Okay, so the preliminary 2021 school budget, we are required to have preliminary approval by March 20th. So the goal is to have that on the agenda for a vote on Monday the 16th. That's the reason we're having our meeting a week earlier than normal. While we're still working on details and such in the office, we do have some brief highlights, if you will. All of the board members, you have this in front of you if you'd like to follow along. So the first thing, just to go over some of the higher cost budget factors that are currently in the budget, and Dr. Cohn and I are still working on, different things that we may be adding or taking away or adjusting in some way. But where we are right now, just to give the board an update and open for discussion, We currently have proposed 17 new special education positions. We have three people who are slated to retire, so we'll have sick day payouts that need to be in the budget for them. We have the Effective School Solutions, which is a program for our MD students. We won't talk about the next two extensively because we'll need to be in executive session for salaries and benefits because of the implications on the negotiations. We are looking at Source for Teachers, which is where we get our subs, to see if there is a possibility of saving some money with our sub situation. Transportation for regular ed and special ed is always a high cost factor in any school budget. There is a proposed new second grade section. We have six sections of first grade. Correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Conan. We have five second grade currently, so we need to add next year. We have a proposed new pre-K disabled section. And then legal costs to the district are always something to be concerned with and pay attention to. Does anyone have any questions about that you'd like to ask Dr. Cohen or myself before we go to that?
It says plus minus.
Yes, that's an estimate of about what the cost is in the budget.
So plus or minus 1.4 million, or it's just
correct.
Plus or minus?
Give or take. And it's not exact.
It's
I rounded it.
Okay.
So it's not. So it might be like 1.4275, you know what I mean? I just rounded it for that.
All right, but it's not 1.4 plus or minus 1.4.
Correct. Yes. Sorry for the confusion on that. It's more like give or take, just because I rounded it.
Is there going to be then five sections of third grade as the second grade class moves up? I mean, is that just reshuffling the staff, or is that actually a new, truly new section?
So some of these will require a new section. With many of our proposed sections, we have information on our enrollment projections, as well as our special ed population projections. We typically do roll up, if it's this many sections in second grade, that will occur in third grade. We have had increases this year in those grade levels as well, and that's what we're anticipating doing. Some of the goals with increase of staff is not to max out our sections. Typically we have students that do move in, but it's also really important and legal, we need to do this, is to balance our sections. So where we're allowed to have a number of special education students, if we have few students in that class, it becomes imbalanced. So mm-hmm. we have to be really mindful of that as well. Mm-hmm. So that answers that question.
Do you have a dollar figure, 21% more for a Source for Teachers?
Yes, that where that came from, we currently pay $127 per day to Source for Teachers. The Hunterdon County approximate average pay for those who employ their own subs is $100, and 100 divided by 127 was 21%. So that's what our out-of-pocket. The subs are only receiving, I believe.
I understand, but okay. Do you have a dollar figure? You say 21%.
100.
What's the?
$127 is 21% more than $100 per day that we pay them.
Do you have the annual?
I do not.
Your estimate annual?
I do not. Not with me. I don't. I'm okay. Well, maybe I do. I can tell you where we're at this year, I think. I can look. Sorry.
First off. Okay, while you're looking for that, I'll ask, I think, a question that Michelle can probably answer.
Okay.
So overall, the population projections for next year, you said you have them by section. Overall, are we expecting a leveling out, a reversal, a continued decline?
So it's interesting because as I'm watching some of the developments around, especially there's one right on Beaver Avenue, 60 units going in, and they're already in the process of being rented. Many of them have two bedrooms, some have three. So I look at those and hope we're getting some new students. As I've reported our enrollment over the last year, I'd say it seems like we're at a steady point. I can say that the enrollment we have seen increase is the number of special education students. So we have included in our projections for the increased needs of staff as well to have more inclusion sections in each grade level.
Okay, and then going back to Maria, your question. We've currently this year, so we're just into March, spent about $175,000 on substitute teachers.
And what's your projection for budgeting for legal costs for next year?
We actually discussed it today, and we've budgeted $50,000 for regular expenses and $50,000 for negotiations. And we've also been talking about different processes that we can formalize and put into place to, in an effort to reduce our legal expenditures, particularly to eliminate like duplicate inquiries and that sort of thing. Okay, so the next slide, if it's okay for me to move on. Mm-hmm. The next slide looks at our revenue, our local funds. So local funds include the tax levy, tuition received from Lebanon Borough, preschool parent paid tuition, and rental income. Those are the, and then we always have some random miscellaneous revenue, but these are the main numbers for us. So the current year, our tax levy, to go across the top, is $23,492,320. If we go to 2%, it's an increase of only $469,846. That's 2% of the $23 million. And the projected new tax levy would be $23,962,166.40. The Lebanon Borough tuition, we have an enrollment adjustment where additional children came in. The adjustments are always taken 2 school years later. So 2 school years ago, additional children came in. So we actually are up by $5,770 with our billing with them. This year, we are currently on target for $450,312. And next year would be $456,082. Preschool tuition, I don't have enrollment numbers for next year, so I left that flat. So we have approximately 54,000 of parent paid tuition, and that's what I have in the budget for next year. And then rental income is primarily from Work Family Connection. They rent, or they do before and after care at 2 schools, and they do pay us rent for that. Next year, there have been some discussions of various opportunities to rent Spruce Run, one being a pre-K wraparound program that we may move forward with Work Family. It's the early stages of conversation at this point, but I did put in some revenue based on discussions for that budget as well. So that would be an increase if we are able to further rent out Spruce Run.
Would that make it accessible to parents who work, like a full day? How much wraparound would that?
So we're looking at right now for our current students, for families to have wraparound care for drop-off, or if they're in, say, the morning program to stay for the afternoon, or if we end up with an afternoon program that they can come in the morning. Okay. We want to make sure that the families of children that are coming for those half-day programs would have access.
Similar to how we used to have kindergarten run?
Yes.
In addition, we are exploring the possibility of accepting tuition students, either parent-paid tuition or from other LEAs for special education students who could potentially attend our programs. That's a good revenue source that would help to defer some of the expenses that we do have with our growing special education population.
But do you have a figure for that, or this is just what you're going to set as basis?
Actually, I haven't.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Sorry, I'm going to answer that. So moving down to the next slide, so the certified tuition rates are set by the state, and it's based on data. So where it says certified tuition rates, those are our current certified tuition rates by program or grade level. So for pre-K and kindergarten, our rate is $17,645. That means that's the maximum we could charge tuition for students to attend our pre-K and kindergarten programs. Grades 1 through 5 are $18,300, and this is per student. Grades 6 through 8, $17,439, and that is the certified tuition rate is what Lebanon Borough presently does pay us. And then when it goes up and down, that's where those adjustments come in, as well as any new students who come or students who leave. The LLD program, The certified tuition rate is $26,736. Autism and multiple disabled is $31,532. And preschool disabled is $13,267. Under new business, I have an item to talk about potential tuition and for the board to have a discussion of their feelings about taking in tuition students. So we can just put that off until we get to new business, or we can talk about it now. It's really at the board's pleasure. Any preference? Late or do it?
I guess I would be curious about other districts who have this practice, and like if you have examples of other districts that have done this, and what type of response have they gotten? Like, what could we expect?
Sure. So I can tell you when I was working at Hampton, we have the middle schoolers from Hampton go to Lebanon Township, and we share a superintendent. So. I'm very familiar with their programs. They have a lot of students who, particularly autistic and like BD or LLD type students, MD or BD students, who go into their district from other local areas. And the suggested tuition numbers I have here are based on what I know them to charge and relative to our certified tuition rates. I don't have an actual revenue figure of what they bring in. But I do know it's significant. Hampton alone was sending them, I think, 4 or 5 students outside of the send and receive, so it was definitely substantial. And I know we do have the bandwidth here to accommodate more students to help defer our costs.
We've had inquiries as well.
Okay, so that sounds great. So the idea would be, so say our fourth grade has enough sections to accommodate 140 students or something. I'm just making up that number. But we only have 127 enrolled. We could say we could take students, but if we became very popular and we had 13 potential fourth graders who came, could we then say we're closed so that we wouldn't then get pushed? Because I see how it could defer costs, but the moment you open a new section, this is a losing proposition.
Right. I would say we would set a number of seats, and that would be what we have to offer. Mm-hmm.
And a risk that I immediately thought of and I did inquire was, what if you accept a tuition-paying student and then 3 months in they are showing signs of needing to be classified, which would cost more money. So the tuition rate, the parent-paid tuition rate, is a regular education parent-paid tuition rate. So if a student were to no longer be a regular education student and become a special education student, then basically that contract is no longer applicable. It would go back to their school district, and then either they would pay the special ed tuition or they would return to whatever program. That would be a different discussion and process at that point. We would not be obligated to continue with the regular education parent paid tuition and provide extraordinary services.
Within that school year?
Okay. Yes.
How would busing work? Or is it out of program?
Well, when a student attends a district other than their own, their resident district is responsible for their transportation.
As long as it's not more than
miles. Yes. Correct. It's either transportation or they'll pay aid in lieu for the parent to drive them. But if they are more than a certain number of miles away, then the parent just. Mm-hmm.
So is the thought process a first come, first served basis for this, or is it a lottery?
Well, I think that depends on how busy we get. I think the board would need to discuss that as well, what your preference would be. I mean, preschool is a lottery. I don't know if we would have the same, interest with opening tuition seats. We'll have to figure that out as a board. Make a decision as if you want to hold a lottery, if you take first come, first serve. We already have interest. I think my feeling would be to, as we have interest, is to fill those seats.
And I can tell you that the tuition rates, the actual cost of adding a regular ed student to an existing section is really, it's the incremental cost is not significant. So it is a revenue source for the district, as well as a service for other students who need that's a place to go.
Is there some potential PR benefit to framing it as a lottery from the beginning so that we avoid the potential pitfall of running out of seats and then?
Well, I would think it would start as, you know, if there's seats available, anyone who applies gets it. However, if the by a certain deadline, if more students have applied than we have seats for, it will be a lottery. I mean, that's how I would.
You probably could just, when you list the opportunity for tuition, you would easily probably say limited to a number of X students per grade level.
And in the event of.
And then first come, first serve.
You know, first come, first serve, and when you reach that threshold, then that's the end. And I don't think it's a PR thing. I think you're just telling people what the parameters are to which we're going to operate in.
From the beginning.
I think it's important to be clear from the beginning, and I think I would be interested to know, like, some grades probably have more room in them than others, and, like, where are we running some risk? Because last year we had some expectations at this time of the year about how many students we would have. And then when September and October rolled around, we were tighter in some grades than others. And so I guess I would just be interested in a view to what that's looking like for next year and sort of proceed with caution.
You know, I think every year you Dr. Cohn and her staff, they do their best job as far as trying to figure out how many students to expect for next year. We've had over the last 5 years two or three circumstances where we've had an influx. I remember in eighth grade, probably 3 years ago, 27 new students came from ICS. Well, there was no way to know they were coming, right? And they literally the week before showed up. And so I think you can do the best you can on projections, but then, you know, just like this year, 23 or 25 students with special needs move into the district. There's no way to project that. And so I think Dr. Cohn and her staff have done a good job of sort of, you know, taking information and trending data over time. And then if you get slammed, then if you have to add another section, you add another section. And, you know, but I don't think it's an exact science, and there's mechanisms to which they use to put in place for that to happen.
And I think this is something where we take that risk by knowing that those are things that can pop up and affect us, that putting this out there is that risk.
I would think, too, that if we knew we had, let's say, for example, we had space for 20, that we wouldn't fill that with capacity and offer that. I think we would err on the side of caution, be a little bit more conservative, knowing that we may have residents move in, that they would need those seats, and then, say, half of those, you know, maybe for tuition students. So we could come up with those numbers.
And I think you also have to be very careful, too, because standards and state guidelines for managing students with special needs can change in a heartbeat. And we have to make sure, as Judy cringes, we have to make sure that we have enough space and enough rooms so that we can accommodate whatever those new state mandates have. And it may just happen like this, and you'll get fined if you don't have the room. So we need to be cognizant of that as well.
The question I was going to raise, you sort of addressed it, Dr. Cohn, was what if we invite, you know, have tuition students in and then we get an influx? Like, do we mid-year tell the tuition students they have to leave?
I don't think we can do that.
So we would have to kind of, like you said, have a buffer, have a plan for that, because that could be a little. Would there be any guarantee for tuition students of once you're in, or let's say we had an influx, we dealt with it for 1 year, but the next year you gotta go because we're at a cap, or would we guarantee to add a section?
No, I don't think that we would say that we would have to add a section. I think we would be conservative from the get-go.
Okay.
And then see how our enrollment is trending as we move along for each year. But I think it would be best to be conservative with it.
Because I just think as a parent who's looking at that program from out of district, if you tell me that it might, you know what I mean? That would make me less likely to do it. So that might be something to consider if we're trying to make this attractive.
My experience in a number of other districts is that once the student is in, they stay in.
Mm-hmm.
And some districts even extend it further where siblings will also be taken. Now, that, of course, is highly dependent upon the number of seats in the district, but I have been in several, at least two districts, I recall, that had that policy.
The only time I think a student probably could not return is if we drop a program. So if we don't have enough of a particular type of, you know, program, right? And we had five last year, but now we have just that student. We couldn't afford to potentially run that program. So, I mean, that would be an opportunity where we'd say, look, you know, we just don't have it.
Right.
You
know? Or if the IEP, their IEP team changes the
placement.
Exactly.
So it's never a guarantee that you're going to come and stay because there's so many variables.
I would just think that would be something we'd have to be specific about.
Yep.
We don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would agree. Thank you.
And what would the timeline look on this?
If the board would be willing to say go with this, I have somebody that would like to come in last week. So the sooner the better. There is interest out there.
Starting this year.
Yes.
Are there legal requirements where we have to advertise it for a certain amount of time? Or, I mean, if we said yes tonight, we might not be saying yes tonight, but next week,
right?
Then
I'll ask our attorney.
It would be wonderful if I had that information at the tip of my fingers, but I do
not. We'll have to check.
Okay. I do not. I can look.
We have great confidence in your encyclopedic knowledge of school.
But sometimes the law, according to Vouch, doesn't always carry the day. This would be one of those times.
Okay.
We have actually talked about, especially for the special education programs, putting together possibly some brochures so that we can market it a little bit through to the county. So that is something that we, as part of the whole thing, we have talked about that. Sorry, I don't know, we talked about that. Just asked.
I guess as somebody who lives on Beaver Avenue, right down the street from the new units, also walks around the Muse, and they have been remodeled, and there seems to be a lot of people moving in there too. I thinking about once they come, they stay. I wonder if we might target recruitment at the middle school level or upper elementary so that it's less of a commitment and we can sort of see how it goes and they will sort of naturally matriculate out faster.
That makes sense. That you know, sometimes students come for all different reasons, and you know, having them then move on to the high school, that makes sense. If that's, you know, then we can kind of keep in mind what's happening, the unknowns of the building that's going on.
It also just seems like at the middle school level, you might be able to sort of massage things around a little bit easier with all of the sections and, you know, this multiple, it's not like you have X number of first grade teachers, right? And they all have to fit in those classes.
I'm not sure I understand your point about the Muse and the, because if people move into the Muse or the Beaver Avenue, they're not paying this tuition, they're residents.
No, but they would be taking up seats that we would be potentially marketing to non-residents. So if we then have the seats taken up by new residents, we would potentially be in a situation where the marginal gain is not there anymore.
Yeah. I think it would be hard to predict what age group they will be.
Yeah.
So I mean, I like that this is lower tuition for kindergarten, because it seems like you get them in the pipeline early. And I don't know if that was a deliberate choice, because it doesn't seem like the certified tuition rate is any less than middle school. So.
But I mean, I would say at this point we need more students, so it all in all is great. Potential.
So for me, I guess the information I'd be looking at if I'm going to make a decision is sort of like, what are the numbers we're looking at? Like how, you know, because to me it almost feels like we're doing a self school choice, which, you know, is better because we can control it, which is good. But I would like to have sort of the information of what's our timeline looking at? Are we going to be able to start taking, are we going to look at students starting tomorrow? are we going to, how many seats are we looking at, and how are we, where's our max, our buffer, and those are what I would like to see.
You know, I think Dr. Cohn is pretty simple. If you take the strategies that you and your staff have implemented for school choice, it's essentially the same thing, right? And you know how many sections you have, where you have extra kids, and
yeah, I can do that. So I'll have that. I'll send it out to everybody before our next meeting.
Good. Thank you.
Okay, the next slide talks about other revenue, state aid. The state aid numbers did come out on the 25th, I believe, of February, or 27th of February, 27th of February, sorry. And so our numbers, if you looked in the paper, it will have said that we actually are down by $130,000. And to an extent, that is true, but I'd just like to explain what really the situation is line by line. I was actually pleased with the numbers because I was anticipating that we would be losing the school choice aid because we're no longer a school choice school. We're phasing out our students. And that's where our loss came in, purely at the school choice line. So if we, I'm just gonna go through each line. Special education categorical aid, we are getting an increase of $36,928, which was unexpected. That's why I was happy. Security aid, we're flat at the special education aid is $1,012,996 this year, $1,049,924 for fiscal year 21. Security aid, we're flat at $95,566. Transportation aid, we're flat at $655,670. School choice aid, this year we received $232,745. Next year we're projected at $66,290, and I'll go into detail on that in just a moment. And then we also, for the past, this is the fourth year, we have an assessment for SDA funding, which is basically, in the past, we received funding for projects from the state, and they're now taking an assessment as a partial payback for that. So that's where we have an $89,000 reduction in our state aid. But again, this is the fourth year, at least, that we, I'm gonna go back more than 4 years to look for it, but this is the fourth year that we've had the same exact amount.
So in real dollars, the amount of state aid we lost is roughly 130?
It is, but I don't consider it lost in terms of lost by state formulas, and I'll explain that for you now. So for the choice, we had reported that we had 18 students, so we were paid for 18 students for fiscal year 20, which is this year. In reality, we only ended up with 13 students, so we were overpaid by 5 students, and that's 5 students times $12,930 per year. So that's $64,650 that we received this year that we weren't actually entitled to, because we did not have as many students as had been reported for. I don't know the reason. It could be a variety of reasons. It wasn't necessarily an error. Students may have left. Happens in all districts where your numbers change and you have assessments. So we are, basically, we owe the state $64,650 in choice money. This year, on our October 2019 snapshot information date for the state school application, we reported 10 choice students. So we're being paid for 10 choice students at $13,094 for fiscal year 20. Because we're phasing out of school choice, we are, the eighth graders that we have currently are not coming back, and that's why our numbers are falling. And the expectation is that every year, this number will fall more and more and more until we don't have any more students who are choice, and that's because we made a decision as a district to phase out and no longer participate in the choice program. So these losses are not state aid losses, in my personal opinion, because they're district driven based on our choices to no longer participate in the choice program.
We're less that money.
Compared to last year, yes, we are less that money. For fiscal year 21, then, we have the $130,940 for our 10 students, minus the $64,650 assessment where we were overpaid. So our district allotment is $66,290 for choice. But again, it's when people talk about losing state aid and the districts get upset and flustered. I mean, there are districts across New Jersey that are losing, I mean, millions of dollars. There are local districts still losing hundreds of thousands of dollars and will for the next several years. We are not part of that. That was a bill called S1. We're not losing as a result of that. When you hear of state aid losses, we're not part of what they're talking about. Our only loss is because we are phasing out of school choice. So, like I said, in my opinion, I don't think this is bad news because we're up by almost $37,000.
But we're still at a deficit versus last year.
We do have less total state aid than last year, yes.
And what's that total number in your opinion?
$129,527.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, $129.
It's right there.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Anybody have any questions about the school choice part? Okay. We also, last year, received $611,085 in extraordinary aid. That's a reimbursement for costs that were incurred during the year. We apply for it in May for the school year you're currently in. So we did receive that, as well as $18,560 in non-public transportation aid. Also, that's not determined until you put in your numbers in May. Those are reimbursement for costs already spent by the district. And that total for last year was $629,645. I think that's what it says. We don't know those numbers for this year yet. However, I do know the formulas, and we do have a fair amount of out-of-district placements that will qualify, as well as students who have one-to-one aids or extraordinary services like related services, OT, PT, that sort of thing. So I do expect that we will have a substantial amount of coming in for extraordinary, but that's not a number that can be predicted, and it's not a number that is wise to put in your budget because you don't know for sure what it will be. So I do not presently have any extraordinary aid money in the budget for next year.
So classically, or minus last year, where we hit the jackpot, which is not normal. The $600,000 is not normal for us.
Mm-hmm.
We've been trending about $100,000, $150,000.
I would say that for that to be the case, just because I've seen numbers at much smaller districts that were closer to the 600 number routinely.
I'm just asking about the past. The past we've been.
I would say that in the past, not all of your extraordinary aid costs were put in for reimbursement. I would be confident in saying that.
We were reimbursed somewhere between, whether it's accurate or not, we took in somewhere between $100,000 to $150,000.
I have not gone back and looked at the historical data on that to answer that.
Just if we could look at that trend, right, and recognize that this $611,000 is not the norm.
It's like a fluke. Yeah.
It's kind of like a freak, and that we budget appropriately based on trends over, because that
I believe that's what you just suggested, right? Was not to budget to that.
I'm not budgeting anything
right.
for extraordinary.
To not to look
right.
at historical
so I was just
data.
Asking what your knowledge was with. Like where we've trended,
I don't know what we have actually received in the past, but I do know how to put in for the reimbursement of extraordinary aid and what counts for that. And I would say with confidence that if this district only got $100,000 in extraordinary aid at some point, that not all of your eligible expenses were put in, because a district this size shouldn't be receiving only $100,000 in extraordinary aid. That's two out-of-district placements will get you there. So I'm confident it's going to be a much larger number than $100,000, but I'm still not budgeting it because you just don't know.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
Any other questions about state revenue?
Can I ask to go back to the school choice question?
Sure.
Or it's not a question. But I was hoping... So we, at some point as a district, made the decision to move away from school choice around concerns that the reimbursement was not covering the cost of the students that we were receiving in the school choice program. That's my understanding of it. However, since then, we seem to have some changing trends within our districts and the students who are just within our population here and their needs. And I'm wondering whether there are any state figures that are available about average costs of educating children in the school choice program, if those may have changed since we made the decision to move away from the program, and understand whether that is also a moving target through time.
I think the state is also exiting out of the school choice program.
Okay, so they're not, just ending it.
They're just ending it because it didn't achieve what they thought it was going to achieve, which was to help close the smaller districts, right, and move those kids away from the smaller districts into the larger districts. And then everybody's cost per pupil were rising, and the state couldn't keep up with it. So the state decided they were exiting out just about the time we said we can't afford this program anymore. Initially, we were getting about $1.2 million in revenue a year, which helped to support a lot of one-time purchases for curriculum and stuff like that. But then we weren't getting paid what they told us they were going to pay us, and then they decided to exit out. So we don't have an opportunity and this choice has changed.
Okay. Thanks for that history.
Okay, the next page is a screenshot from the state budget software, just to inform the board where we are with our cap banking eligibility. For those who don't know what cap banking is, or banked cap as it's referred, if a district does not take all of the tax levy that it's allowed to take in a given year, for example, you can go to 2%. So let's say your 2% was $100,000 and the district did not assess the 2% and didn't raise any taxes. So that 2% dollar amount is considered banked cap. It's not actual money. It's funds that are available to levy against at a future point in time. So it's not like money in a bank. A lot of people get confused by that because of the word bank in there. It's the ability to tax. So our banked cap currently, if you, the board will look at the bottom, I circled in red. So we have a total banked cap available for this year that we are permitted to take. I'm not suggesting that we do or saying that we will, but just so you're aware, is $853,377. And that would be in addition to the 2%. You're allowed to hold on to your banked cap funds, or funds that you didn't levy against the tax, or levy against the community, if you will, for 3 years. And at the end of 3 years, the amount that's 3 years old expires. Expiring this year, if we don't use it, is $276,737. And then if you look down at the next line, I didn't circle it, but those are the amounts that will expire in the subsequent next 2 years.
And just to be clear, the only way you spend that expiring money is if you spend everything that we saved up in the more recent years, right? You don't get to say that we're
going to
use it or
ago.
Lose it just the 267,000. We would have to $853,000 to actually use that up.
Right, the 276,000 was generated by not going to it could be from, there are other things other than not going to 2% that could generate it. You could have an enrollment adjustment or healthcare adjustment. There are other possible sources of these numbers. But in 2017-18, the district, for whatever reason, left $276,737 on the table, if you will, and didn't tax that amount of money. So it's available for 3 years. That amount was available every year since 17-18, and then it's available this year. So if we did take bank cap, that amount would be the first that we'd use. And then next year, there's a little over $307,000 that was generated in 18-19. So next year, let's just assume we use the, we go to 2%, we don't leave anything on the table this year. And so next year you would only have the 307 plus the 46
546.
Thank you, 46,000. That was generated in 1920. So you use the oldest funds first. Is that what you're asking?
Yes, that was what I was asking. Thank you.
Sort of a roundabout way of answering that.
Bank cap would increase taxes.
Yes.
So whatever you would increase your budget to, that would be increase of budget plus this.
That's correct. If you look down at the next, I took the ratables and did the formulas in Excel. The ratables, if you'd like to look at them, are available on the Hunterdon County website, the clerk's office, that website. And just to, I mean, I'm not going to explain all the formulas to you, but if you look down to the third, where it says 2% levy increase, 2% of our current tax levy is $469,846. If you go across to the green box where it says the increase and has the percent, and then you look where it says average home, if we took 2%, the average home, and that would be the average home sale price for Clinton Township is $409,900, and that's from realtor.com. That's actually a higher number than Zillow, so I used the greater of the two numbers. And then the average assessed value, and I did put in the box here to explain what the average assessed value is 50% of the market value, or $204,950 per the average per home in Clinton Township. So based on an average home of $204,950, the average annual increase in taxes to go to 2% is $48.07, or $4.01 per month. If we took, I just to put a number in, for an example, $200,000 of the banked cap, then we would be looking at $67.15 annually for the average home, and $5.60 per month. Just to sort of put it into perspective of what these numbers mean to an individual family or homeowner.
So if when you guys present this budget in your at the next meeting, can you call the township and find out the actual numbers? So the actual average home sale and then the average assessed value. Because those are the numbers that I think will be used when they look at what we're presenting as a levy, not off of Zillow or other things like that. So,
well, I'm sorry. Why do you want me to, what is it I'm looking for? I misunderstood you.
So if I'm sorry if I misunderstood you. Classically, when we get the average set home, like sale of the home and all of this stuff that you've pulled off
right,
the web, we normally get that from the township and not off the web, so that when we present it, it's exact numbers based on what the township has and not necessarily what's off the website.
Okay, so just to be clear, the calculations are completely off of the county website, just for my example. In terms of the average home price, that was only there as an example for to break it down to the house. It was not part of the calculations. Those are the ratables that are on the actual county website, but I'll be happy to get the exact numbers for you.
Yeah,
anyway.
No, I mean, just we've always presented it with what the actual
okay, that's
are
fine. I just wanted to make sure everybody was clear that I didn't use website numbers for calculations. I used the actual county ratables. Okay. Does anyone have any questions about that?
How up to date are the ratables on the website versus when they recalculate them at this point in time? How often do they update?
Every year. They do them annually.
Yeah. But is it the end of the calendar year? Or is it at the end of a fiscal year?
End of a calendar year. Well, it wouldn't be a school year, so calendar year. Because the ratables aren't just for school. The ratables are the town assessed values. They're not...
Can we reach out to them and find out when the update is so that we can make sure that we're the most current?
We can, but I think they only put them out once. So they don't change them periodically.
That's all.
Yeah.
I think they come out at the end of the year. At least that's when we got a new assessment for our house. I think that's the timing.
I can confirm with Marina.
Yeah, I would double check the average assessed value because that seems awfully low. I know our assessed value is closer to 80% of our actual value.
And this, again, from the county website, I pulled the box so you could see my rationale, but I'll double check.
I understand, it's just an example.
Okay.
Just a question on
Just trying to make sure I'm reading this right. So the 4807 monthly
annually
on the levy, and then the one below it with the bank cap, the 67.
Correct.
Is that in addition to the 48, or that would be all together?
All inclusive.
Okay.
Okay, and then the last slide we'll wait to talk about in executive session. It's attorney-client privilege, so we'll hold on that. Does anyone have any questions about any of the information so far in the budget or anything that I didn't share that you want to see if we know yet?
Or have for the next meeting?
Oh, certainly we'll have for the next meeting, yes.
So this second slide that you have here with high cost budget factors?
Yes.
Can you present to us last year, year before, and what you're projected for next year so we know if it's an addition or less?
Yes, we'll be giving, you'll be getting the booklet that you received in the past that has the lines broken down that way.
Okay, but can you do it for this particular slide? Because you've highlighted these as the
sure.
The big ones. That would be helpful since these are driving things. And can we also find out what you've cut from the budget? What items you've cut from the budget and what you might have added?
Versus last year? One other item, if I could, before we talk about the board minutes, it's not in the agenda, but I just wanted to give a friendly reminder for board members to please be sure that you've completed your ethics disclosures and that the mandatory training for many is still lingering out there. It's always better to get it done sooner rather than later. Thank you. And do you want to talk about this?
Yes. So we have the next meeting dates, which are March 16th, which is next Monday. Our next work session is April 6th, and the public hearing for the budget is April 27th. It was proposed March 30th for a board retreat. I received no emails saying that they had a conflict. So, is everyone good to have the board retreat on the March 30th?
Blocked my calendar.
What are the hours?
It would be similar to a meeting like this. It would be in the evening. It almost exactly as one of our meetings. So then the March 30th we'll confirm that at the next meeting.
Okay, so we'll vote and then we can publish it in the paper.
Yes.
So at the last meeting, we had March 23rd as the next meeting date, and we talked in executive session about it being wrong, but we never...
Can't talk in executive session.
Someone observed that we had the wrong date. Do we need to make another motion to make sure that it is?
I thought we corrected the.
It was just a typo. It was just a typo in the agenda. It's correct. It was published correctly in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so now we're good there, and we're going to move on to superintendent.
I normally don't do a superintendent's report, but I did want to give an update regarding Health Matters since that is on everyone's minds. All day. So in regard to communications, a communication regarding the health matters, including coronavirus, was sent out from the district to staff and families last week. The information in our letter came directly from the Hunterdon County Health Department and the CDC. We have received some questions from parents regarding the length of time for a child to be fever-free before returning to school. The recommendation is 24 hours. The health department noted that there had been some misinformation on social media regarding this and other recommendations, and they are suggesting that the public access the official websites linked in our letters for the most accurate information. So they were able to go and address that, as many people had questions. So thank you for people who reached out. In regard to what schools are currently doing related to the potential outbreaks and the impact on our district, please know that the district is currently taking steps to plan for any health-related incidents and impacts. As you remember, last year we had a flu and virus situation that was not good for anybody, and we actually did close. The difference for this is that any closure would be directed to us from the health officials. They would take this this action. So, and that's unlike that they've ever done before. In the past, we collaborated with health officials. Last year, we had conversations, giant conference call with CDC, infectious disease people, our school doctor, the health department, the Department of Ed, and collaboratively, and it was up to the district that it was in our best interest to close and get cleaning done. This will be a different situation where the health department, if necessary, would come in and say, you're closed. Because of that, as you probably heard, the governor announced that schools would be given credit, unlike Hurricane Sandy, when districts were closed and you still had to make up your days. So in this instance, what they're asking for is instruction of some type to take place. Now, although we do see districts already closing to make plans, those plans have just been released this morning about what it is that they'd like us to do. Rather than jump into it right away, we thought it would be best to find out exactly what was going to be needed. And on March 11th, Wednesday afternoon, I'll be attending a planning session down at the County Department of Ed office, as will be all of the superintendents from Hunterdon County. As far as cleaning recommendations, there are no other cleaning recommendations given. There's nothing needed to be done other than our normal cleaning procedures. We've also noted that the county health department, we do keep in touch with the Department of Health. They are very active with our nurses. We're very grateful to the nurses in our district. They report illness so the county can track any trends and make good decisions for us as well as other districts. This is what helps us all stay healthy. So we'll continue to provide the updates on the health matters as we receive them. I did send one out today. That was our Friday notification. I had also been at a planning meeting on Friday. And the governor just this evening or this afternoon declared a state of emergency. Please don't be alarmed by that. I understood that releases funds for the planning of a potential impact. And so that's what we're looking at. And really the impact of instruction, what we're looking at is that it has to address equity for all students, and we also have to take care of those students who might be needing food services. And so we'll be getting more information out to you as soon as we know what we're planning for. But rather than, you know, jump into it and plan for something that is unnecessary, we thought we'd wait. What happens is after we have our planning session, we come back to district, do more planning, and then submit our plan to the Hunterdon County Department of Education, and they will approve the plan. That approved plan is what gets us credit for any days we may be out. So there's a very succinct, structured method of going about our plans for any type of instruction. Okay, so thank you.
Dr. Jones, can I ask
a question? Sure.
At this point in time, would it be, in your opinion, something to consider?
I'm sorry, can you speak up a little bit?
I'm sorry. on the website, to make a new tab just for coronavirus?
Yes, we did that today.
You did too. Thank you.
Yes, as we're getting more information, we often see that sometimes on the website things get scrolled down, but we want everyone to be able to see everything that we put out. So thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on to facilities and finance. We have 8 motions for next week. Does anyone have any questions on any of these items?
A question around the Kidder Media. I know we discussed that last fall in the communications committee, and I was just curious if you could share a little bit more about any evolution of thinking around that since we met last fall, and what sort of spurred the action that we requested to take next week.
So I've sent down 4 samples for each side of the table to take a look at. Kidder Media actually contacted me around the same time we started having discussions about communication. This company's former teacher outside of New Jersey, they prepare media releases, but
and they do the whole thing. They come in with photographers, they work closely with staff, they write the stories, and then they come up with a publication. This may or may not be something that the board is interested in, but I'm putting it forward for discussion tonight. The total cost without our postage, which we have to take care of, would be $5,347. That would give us one publication sent out to all residents of Clinton Township. At the same time, we already use the Clinton Township newsletter, and we're within the publication. That goes out to every home as well. So, and this is something that we talked about in Communications Committee, is do we want a separate publication that really highlights the school, part of the branding aspect? And so that's something that I wanted to put out there for you to take a look at, whether we think that's of value. I do see this as something that can go in real estate offices when you have, you know, people coming out and looking for homes. They may not be out, you know, from the area. Is this something that could be left at a real estate office for interest? Probably the same blanket. It's one publication. It gives us a little bit of a shot, and then we can decide whether or not that's something we'd like to pursue moving forward in the future, you know, additional publications.
Would there be a link to like a digital version of it that we'd be able to have on the website as well for people looking?
You know, I can ask about that. What they do like to do is to host everything for you. So it is, they do have an a la carte approach, which is very nice. They'd like to do Facebook. They'd like to do everything for us, but they'll do as much or as little as we ask. So I can ask them about a digital publication. That would be great.
So I have a couple of questions. Since we do the monthly Clinton Township newsletter, would it just be an idea to just take and create something with their help on an overview of our schools and what we do well and how our kids perform and what programs we offer and leave that at realtor offices, right, versus duplicating what we already do with the Clinton Township newsletter? Because we have specific policies of, you know, not to over, you know, make a lot of duplications and repeat expenditures in this regard. And I'm just wondering if, you know, we did a nice brochure newsletter that says this is who we are, these are our kids, this is what we offer, this is how well they perform. And because the newsletter does that, but it doesn't say it every single month. And if we're just trying to target people, you know, with realtors, it might make better sense to maybe do that versus duplicate what we're already doing.
We can do that, and just as a note, so what this publication is this professional writer and photographer that comes out, speaks to staff, to administration, to get some understanding of some stories, takes professional photographs of students, will do the releases. The Clinton Township newsletter is put together monthly by myself and the principals, and any teacher who's willing to give us a photo. So. It's a little bit of a different quality. This, I think, has more of a polished look than what we can submit with our photos and whatnot. But it's certainly up to the board as to the direction they'd like to take. And we can certainly table it, have more discussion. I can find out more from the Clinton Township newsletter team if they have the ability to send us people to do something similar.
I guess I would be curious. It sounds like what we really want is a brochure, which would be different than a newsletter that would be published multiple times per year. How many times would this be published?
This price is for one. They'll do as many or as little as we'd like.
Okay. So I guess maybe what we're looking for is like a format that looks more like a brochure, like a one-time thing that's maybe a little bit more evergreen content that highlights the attributes of the district. And if that changes the pricing, and then we're not mailing it, and I guess I would be interested in that.
Sure.
It sounds like what we're not trying to replace the newsletter.
Correct.
The newsletter is the newsletter. We're trying to create a brochure.
Yeah, from what you're describing, I don't think that's something that necessarily needs to go home. Mm-hmm. I think the idea of having it for the in realtors' offices or wherever, that's a different animal. And in that case, that's not the same thing that would want to go home. Parents don't necessarily need to see that because they're reading the newsletter. So.
So I can certainly do that. Would you like me to pursue that through Kidder Media to find out what they?
I mean, it sounds like they seem like a promising avenue, and maybe we don't need 5,000.
Yeah.
If we're not mailing just.
Them. And then we don't have to mail them, and right. That would be a significant cost savings on that end of it.
Yeah. A little bit more
surgical. Sure, I can do that, and we can push it to another month when I have some more information. So that's a great idea.
So we're tables?
Yeah, do that.
If you're doing that, I think it'd be nice for us to have an update on our social media outreach as well, because yes. We approved that several months ago, and yes. I don't think anything has happened. And so that sort of speaks to a larger communication plan that I think it's time we had an update.
Absolutely, and I can do that right now. So just this week, our filter problems have been resolved. So part of the issue with getting our Facebook up and running is the filter that we have. And so the technology department has worked on that and has gotten us access to it. The next part is now to build it, to build our site.
Filter meaning that the Facebook in-house. Was stopped at our door.
Yes, it was. We wanted it, we couldn't get it. So now we can. So, yeah. So we'll have that up soon. So thank you.
Yes.
I guess just going back to the brochure, I'm just thinking, I mean, Kidder seems like it's a good thing, but if we're looking for less copies and we're looking to highlight what we do mm-hmm. so well here, would it also like be a good thing to look for local companies?
Yeah,
that
I would think so.
In town?
Sure. Thank you.
Any other additional questions for facility and finance items?
On G, the JCAP grant, what exactly do they do? They listed on the application some sessions with kindergarten classes and I guess probably first grade classes?
Yes.
But then separately, one staff workshop and one parent workshop. So what are the six and the six classroom sessions?
So the CAP program is the Child Assault Prevention Program.
Mm-hmm.
That comes hand in hand with training for both staff and parents. And so each year we've done that. And we've also talked about expanding that to another grade level. I don't know if this actually includes that expansion, but I can find out about that for March 16th.
Thank you.
What grade are you looking to expand to?
I think they want to expand it to second grade, but I'm not sure if that includes this or is that maybe that's what we're thinking about for next year. This might be what we've always done, the lower grades.
And we've been doing this for quite a few
years. Yes, we have.
On FFG, do we have to put do not to exceed?
Which one, I'm sorry?
D.
We can. I have the quote and the exact amount, but we can add that.
Yeah, I didn't know if you needed to.
Yep, that's a good idea. Not a problem.
So, Dr. Cohen, you said you were going to table which one?
The Kidder Media. We'll table Kidder Media.
E.
Yes.
So, I have a question.
Okay. So facilities and finance are good. Okay. We are going to move on to personnel. We have about five items there. Any questions? Yeah.
Just ignorance. What is the home consultation?
Home consultation.
It's for special services.
That's
fine.
Thank you. Question? So I have a question on PE. I was just wondering, Mom, if you could tell me the genesis of this one?
This one is going, I'm going to actually ask Rich to deal.
You can direct your question to me. I don't know, PE, you talked for the sick leave bank?
Yep.
I'll have to be careful how I respond. It's a matter subject to collective negotiations.
Okay, so I'm just curious, the genesis of it, what, I mean?
That I cannot discuss on public record. We'd have to discuss that in exact.
So are we putting something on the agenda before? Or has this already been agreed to? I mean, I.
The answer is, it is not subject to a memorandum of agreement between negotiating committees, if that's your question. No, this is not a genesis from, it's not a result of any agreement. This is just a proposal.
We can talk about it in executive session tonight, and we're not voting on it tonight. We're voting on it next week. So
I think we have to talk about this yes.
Because it's private in executive session. It's a personnel issue.
Yes.
It's not a personnel issue, right?
I mean, if you're asking about the genesis of it, it is.
It is a personnel.
It's a personnel issue, but
it's personnel, but it's also a collective negotiations issue.
And we're going to, I'm seeing no one else with additional questions, so we will move on to policy. Yes.
So, everybody did receive this policy, even though I know we're in the process of doing this grand update with Strauss Esme. This will just get all put into the bucket when we have our mass update. As due to the most recent health concerns throughout everywhere, we've been asked in the county what policies we're currently using that deal with students that may be ill. Right now, the one policy we do have is our home instruction policy, which is what we've been asked to use if someone is ill. However, that will slightly change when or if we happen to be closed. That's a whole different animal. This policy is the communicable disease policy. It is a Strauss Esme policy, and it simply states that we may exclude students who are exhibiting signs of illness. It's a practice that the district already does, but we'll, by looking at this policy, it formalizes what we do.
I have a question about the inclusion of the term weeping skin lesions. Now that, it sounds awful, but I asked about.
I believe that's right out of the statute.
Okay. All right, then I guess I just think about it. My daughter has very bad eczema, which sometimes looks like a weeping thing, but it's on her hands. So, and you're not supposed to put Band-Aids over it, but, and it's not an infection or anything that's transferable. I know, and she gets it on the back of her knees, and she's already very self-conscious about it. I just would, maybe there was some way that we could specify, I don't know, something that was infectious.
Non-infectious weeping skin lesions or something along those lines.
I try my best to have her never have skin lesions of any kind.
I think that we would not
be
able to.
Sorry, poor Gwyneth.
So, we would not be able to assume a diagnosis.
Okay.
So we would have to be able to send the child home. However, if that parent is in touch with the school nurse and lets that nurse know, gee, my child has X, then that would be something that would be okay.
Okay.
But this is, this is designed to control what could be out of control very quickly.
Yeah, you wouldn't want a whole school full of weeping.
Exactly.
But,
thank you.
But this seems very definitive, right? It says shall be excluded from school. It doesn't say that there's
may,
unless there's a note from the doctor or.
And this comes from statute.
Right? I believe this is. I can actually get the statutory language in a minute. So, but I believe it's right out of the statute.
Yeah.
Our statutes are not very modern.
Mm-hmm.
And don't account for today's medical acumen.
thus the weeping skin lesions.
Yes.
To be treated with leeches.
Sad day.
My only suggestion would be to add Hunterdon County Board of Health.
We will be adding the Hunterdon County Board of Health to it.
So, Dr. Cohn, this is the standard Strauss Esme policy that we're in the process of bringing in.
Yes.
So, will we be making modifications to it, customizing it, or is the plan to take it as is?
I would suggest taking it as is. I don't see any need to do an adjustment to it other than adding the word Hunterdon where it asks what Board of Health.
So I have one question. There's a clause about students having a communicable disease shall not be readmitted to the classroom until written evidence of being free of the communicable disease. Is that different than what we have now? Because
right now we do not have a policy, but our practice is that we check with parents when they come back to school. We want to make sure that they're fever-free. If they're still active, let's say chickenpox, that once in a while shows up even though there's vaccinations. We want to make sure there are no symptoms of that.
What about a virus like a cold? I mean, isn't that a communicable disease that we don't usually get written?
There's a protocol, there's an exclusions list that is designated from the Hunterdon County Health Department, and so each nurse follows that exclusions checklist. And it could be if the child has, they might have a cold, but if they have a fever. So we're looking at right now, we're asking people to be symptom-free when they return. One of the things we have noticed is that people come back too early.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're asking people to make sure that they, that they don't come back too early. We don't want reinfection into the schools.
But you don't exclude students with a cold. Could it be more specific about what types of illnesses, what types of symptoms?
I think the moment we get really specific, then we're going to miss one, and then that'll be the outlier. So I'd hate to do that. I think keeping the policy as a general guideline for us is more supportive, along with that exclusions list from the county health department.
And can that written evidence be from a parent, or does it have to be from
a medical professional? I would say it would probably be from a doctor.
Seems like, I mean, you're not supposed to bring them in until they've had their fever for whatever it is.
But parents don't comply with that.
No. I mean to the doctor. Like, the Hunterdon Pediatrics will tell you, don't bring them in until they have been sick for X amount of time.
Right.
You're not supposed to bring them in at the first day of them having a fever. So there's a fair chance that they would have a fever, get sent home from school. It's a 24-hour bug. They get over it. You would not go to a doctor under normal circumstances.
So I would understand that. So in that, so the child leaves school with a fever.
Yeah.
We don't know if it's a communicable disease. We know the child has a fever. However, that child needs to be home 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So if that child goes home at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, they're also out the next day. So what we're seeing is that, and we know that happens with kids. They wake up the next day, they're bouncing around, they feel great. So go to school. But they really do need to be out that full 24 hours. So, it's saying doctor's note, but I mean, I think that if communicable disease, you have somebody that's down with strep, well, that's a different story. We want to make sure they're clear.
But I think the issue is that this is requiring that someone go to the doctor when the doctors aren't necessarily
allowing them
asking people to come in.
Mm.
Because if the written evidence part is, I don't think anyone's quibbling with people should be home for a decent amount of time.
Dr. Cohn, has our physician looked at this?
I can have him take a look at it. I can send it to him and have it back for our meeting on the 16th.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Sure. Everything away the doctor.
Okay, so policy. We're going to move on to curriculum.
So if Mrs. Hinkle would like to come up and talk a little bit about science and social studies. I think that we're looking at science and social studies for approval on the 16th. And if you could give us a little bit of an overview. Mrs. Pacione's coming too. Got a two for
the gang's all here.
The gang's all here. Thank you very much.
Hey, one prize, you get us both. What we're seeking tonight is... For the, I guess it's the
officially the next board meeting, is the approval for the science and social studies curriculum. It's part of the CUSAC lineup of having to do two things. One, do the annual approval in July, but also do individual approvals all throughout the course of the year. There's snapshots of where the curriculum is. Is that better? There, basically what we're asking is for an approval of the snapshot of where the curriculum stands at this time. We did, I think, ELA and math, was it 2 months ago? And then we're looking for science and social studies this month. We have to get through dance, and there's a whole list that we've kind of parsed out over the course of the next several months. But there, that's part of your CUSAC score, is the snapshot approval of them over the course of the year. Science and social studies, they are two sets of the new standards that are being proposed right now. The science standards that were adopted a few years ago for the next generation, they stand to stay pretty much intact. The ELA standard, or excuse me, the social studies standards, they look like they're going to be a fairly significant change in how the standards are reflected throughout the grade levels. The focus shifting to more of United States history and the United States role in the world, and a little less on, we do a lot on Egypt and different groups, and that's sort of waning in terms of what it is. So it's going to be a significant change for social studies. So we look, even though we're asking for approval now, and we'll be asking for approval again in July, we know that there's going to be some significant rewrite as we go through the proposed changes. So is another, just I think a question had come up as far as the template. We use the understanding, the UBD template, the understanding by design. You guys were given a link to preview. Keep in mind that you only see the first five items of the UBD template. Those are the only five sections that are published to the public. We keep the others back because they're not necessary and sometimes prohibitive to publish them, because they include the assessments and different items. So we don't add those. So we have a copy, if you'd like, of what that looks like. When we look at, we talked before about the departmentalization. This kind of keys right into what we're looking at, because we really look at our science standards as they're written and as they are, the units are created for our 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. You can see a lot more depth to the unit because of the highly qualified nature that people teach in that. When I'm looking at maybe a 2nd grade unit, I see a lot less depth to that unit because I understand that that teacher is also prepping 6 other units that day. So keeping that in mind, it's still a work in progress. We've been in Curriculum Builder for 2 years now. This will be our third, right?
Yeah.
So this is a whole new posting system that we switched to from Atlas. I don't know if you remember the old one. Maria nods her head. She remembers the old one. I think the rest of you might be a little younger than, sadly, we are.
I know for part of Next Gen, there's supposed to be like cross-cutting standards, and
yep,
there's a whole...
it's a three-pronged approach, the core concepts, the cross-cutting standards, and then the
so where standards. Are those in...
So you'll see those items in the... They're really very specifically outlined in the upper grade units.
Okay.
Less so in the others. They're the lower grades stay with that understanding by design, and then... you'd have to go into more of the lesson plans to see when they're talking about patterning or some of the things that cross over.
Can you just help me understand how these documents are used, because and how they're developed?
So
you said that they're like sort of constantly being revised.
They are.
I don't have a good sense just from looking at them.
So it's not honestly something that there's been a huge time investment in over the years. And so I think when we left the prior program of Atlas, it was a program that staff members weren't really accessing on a regular basis. But the design of the map is so that a new teacher could come in and understand what the units are, what they look like, what the order is, and it breaks it down into the individual components. Now, keep in mind that the lesson plans are in a separate structure, lesson planner and curriculum builder. OnCourse holds both. So OnCourse is the overall platform, and within that we have the curriculum units, the mapping, and then we also have the lesson planner where teachers write their daily lesson plans. So there are two different pieces to it.
Okay, so in an ideal world, a teacher would go to these documents first and then write a lesson plan from them, or someone has done that, and then we have a pool of lesson plans that then a teacher implements in their class?
Yes, and a little bit of no, because sometimes it works backwards. Sometimes people like to do it backwards. So it's kind of a choice. One of the things that I think has happened is we tend to look at our lessons first and go back on what has been done in prior years and then adopt it, you know, kind of make those things change as we go through it. I think what happens is once a month at a faculty meeting, we designate that time as curriculum time. But that's an hour out of a very long period of time. So staff also need to update curriculum when they have some team planning time. So it's not a huge time investment in terms of working on the curriculum. It's better than it was, and we're hopeful that in the structure of the calendar next year, with the half days, that we can dedicate more time to it.
So my understanding is that from last year, it was sort of discussed that you pilot a curriculum and then you sort of implement it more widely and then maybe for a couple years and then you might go into another pilot session. That this sounds like it's sort of a constant state of revision. Is there ever any sort of stability where, like, this is our curriculum, it's going to be our curriculum for 5 years, and then we'll reassess this and we'll stagger the grades or the subjects? And
so the curriculum is the standards. So basically
the
materials that you
choose. The curriculum is not the standards.
So
the curriculum is how you implement the standards.
So we have to go by what the New Jersey Student Learning Standards are. And then what we can decide are the materials that we use to implement them. So that's our choice. We can choose Go Math versus Chicago Math versus whatever. So we get to choose those. If you're asking, like, do we pilot programs and decide in a content area if those are good, yes, we do. So when we decide that we're going to need to revise something in social studies, as we did in some of our younger grades, we looked at several different series, and we went with a 3-4 series that we just kind of started implementing this past year. It's an interactive social studies series. So yes, we do pilot that, and we gather a lot of data on it. But before that, we look at a metric ton of series to see which ones actually align to the standards the best, and which ones have more of the instructional model that we like to follow.
I still don't see the connection between these documents and the materials that are being used, because now you're saying that I know we're not voting on math. We voted on math already, but that our math curriculum is Go Math. But these documents don't say anything about the materials that are being used for science and social studies. So I don't know what is the curriculum, these documents, or is the curriculum that we're voting on the textbooks and online resources that are being used?
What you're voting on is these documents, the curriculum maps and the basically the longitudinal piece where it falls throughout the year, the units. So that's what you're not approving materials tonight. That's a separate item. That's an annual approval. We're not required to keep doing that all the time. We just do that once a year. So there's no change in that. There are pieces that are not published that you don't see. I don't know if you want to show this.
I printed out for you a copy of the 8th grade unit and a copy of the 2nd grade unit. So you could see the difference of the depth of an 8th grade class and the depth of a 2nd grade class. What happens, these are units, and that's what's taught throughout the year. So let me explain it more. You're approving the units that we teach throughout the year. So sometimes some teachers have a little bit of different resources, some use all the resources, that's why it's fluid. It's the basis for what they create their lesson plans from. They know right now, they're in the weather unit for kindergarten. So that's their focus for that for however many weeks it is. So you'll see second grade has enduring of understandings, the essential questions, the UBD design.
This template for eighth grade follows our science template, which has those cross-cutting concepts, you know, all the different three components that you would ask for in science. So it has the disciplinary core ideas, your cross-cutting concepts, your science and engineering practices, your resources, your differentiation, the unit time frame, formative assessment, summative assessment. All of that is accessible to every single teacher. And I say tell teachers, these units need to be as complete as possible because say you leave one year, someone else has to come in your place. They need this unit as their guide. And that guide is what creates their lesson plans. So you are only seeing part of it. This is the whole unit that the teachers see.
So you're seeing, when you look at the public site, the unit summary, the standards, the learning objectives, the, probably it'll say the essential questions, and the enduring objectives.
Can I ask why more of this isn't on the public website? I just think as parents, they would be interested in seeing some of this, knowing some of the different activities. Like, I don't know, I'm kind of a nerd, but like when I plan my summer travel, if I know my son has studied Pilgrims and talk specifically about this, then I will take him there. If I know he's going to be studying something, I can, because I do that kind of stuff. So I think having more of this available to the public, like looking at the documents just passed around, there's nothing on here that's...
Well, you remember also, you're seeing a PDF, and so what the teachers would see would have links and a lot of other things in it, so.
Right, so some of the teachers, this is why we're gonna spend some time this summer cleaning it up. Some of the teachers have their assessments in a link because it's a resource for the teachers. So those are the ones that we made non-public because we didn't wanna have someone's assessment available to everyone.
No, and I understand like having a test on there, but I mean, you have on here like the summative assessments and just the, which is just a general overview of what they're gonna be able to do.
Right, and that's the particular one you see. We have hundreds of these and they're not all that don't have accessible links.
I don't understand why the answer is no. There are districts that put information like this up already and are, we don't have this. So
right,
is there some reason why we can't move to that point where we can put something online as Ms.
And
Bumbach
you can, I mean,
suggested.
We can go on and take the hyperlinks off for the public version. Like, there's ways to do that.
If I could just interject, I think that's what you're saying is going to be done this summer, correct?
Correct.
That's what they're moving toward. It is not there now. The work has just begun.
To put all of this on there.
And
so
just without the links.
I don't know that that's a discussion we'll have about how much further we would go with.
We'll have to have that discussion, and I would get it back to the board as to what it looks like, what we're going to be putting on.
But the plan is to get it on the website.
We're expanding right now. Yes, we're getting it on the website right now. We're in the infancy stages of this, so that's why you're not seeing everything that you would like to see.
Okay. I understand a work in progress. I just feel like what's on there right now doesn't really tell us much. So I understand there's certain things that can't go on. There's proprietary things that can't go on. I get that part. But I just feel like as a board, as a parent, as an educator, I want to know more. And I just don't see a reason why 90% of this can't be available to the public.
I looked at two today. Reddington Township has a lovely website. Howell Township has absolutely fantastic science curricula that's up. And their essential questions make me want to take those second grade classes in science. So I think those look fantastic if you're looking for a guide.
Okay.
We'll have that discussion in-house and be in back with you.
And to have like the SLOs, just having them out there, I think having parents have access to that lets parents help a lot more at the end of the day. I mean, it's a bullet point, 5 or 6 things for each class. The parents can be at home working, you know, working with their students or taking vacations. I mean, and it's also, if we're going on this brochure and this idea of selling all this stuff with the mm-hmm. district, it's another way people can look at our website and see this material and be like, wow, like you just said, you want to take some of those classes. Mm-hmm. It could maybe drive more interest.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We have back on policy.
Sorry.
Back on this policy, the proposed policy on communicable disease. Have an answer. It's not satisfactory. Dr. Grath, you've hit the nail on the head. This actually refers to a statute that refers to a regulation that refers to a nested regulation. I went back to the beginning, to the nested regulation. It's a Department of Health regulation that pertains to HIV. However, you would think, oh, well, now we're only talking about people with HIV. No, it's not clear what we're talking about. Because they use an undefined term, where they talk about students with HIV infection and adults with HIV infection. Here they talk about a person with a weeping lesion. Okay? It is not clear that the person refers to a person with HIV. It is unclear. What I would recommend is going to the health department and seeking guidance from them as to how they have interpreted this regulation. I am concerned, as Dr. Grantham has pointed out, that this could be construed as overbroad. I'm very concerned about it. And Strauss asked me, with all due respect, puts policies out. Actually, they made up the term student or adult. That's not what is in the regulation. The regulation states person. Now, one could say, well, that encompasses students or adults, but it could actually encompass a third more, other children who are not students. So I think further research on this is required, unless the superintendent believes it would compromise the district's safety to hold off on this.
I don't think it would compromise the safety. I think we still follow our district practices for exclusion, and that's set by the guidelines of the county health department. So I'm comfortable tabling this until we have further advice. Probably not March 16th, maybe, but they're a little busy down there these days.
Yeah.
We have a few phone calls coming in.
Yeah, I mean, it's frankly, some of the regulations that are there, I question whether they're even applicable today with modern medicine.
Okay. Thank you.
2010 was very, treatment of HIV in 2010 was very different than it is now.
So the recommendation is for you to also go to the health department, but what do you think about having our physician, our district physician, take a look at it after the health department looks at it, or simultaneously? Because he's the one who ultimately has to, he signs off on a lot of all of this, right?
Absolutely.
So concurrently or?
Right, no, I think it goes back in the hopper for consideration.
Right, but should the health department first, then him, or in the same time?
Let's get let me get the interpretation from the health district, the health department. Okay.
And then pass it to him.
I think that's good. Mm-hmm. And then let's see what they say. Mm-hmm. And we'll see at that point what is happening. And we could also discuss this a little in exact, because I have an idea on this also.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other additional questions in curriculum? We do not have anything in communications, although you did update us. Thank you. Old business. For science night, we had talked about it at our last meeting. I reached out to Gwen, and she said that as long as we keep it to no more than 4 board members at a time period, that we can, board members are welcome to participate in science night. So if you are interested in helping work the table, please reach out to Dr. Riamaki. I believe she's going to take care of that for us.
Yeah, I mean, we can come up with a rotation.
We have a policy 9120.1 that says the district will not engage in public activities such as booths, marketing activities, celebration, blah, 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 TV productions that are not part of the instructional program and community stuff. So although Gwen said yes, can we, Rich, can you take a look at the policy and just make sure that we can actually do that?
I'm sorry. The other thing I didn't forget. No, I didn't hear what you said.
So there's a policy 9120.1R. It's in the regulation. The district.
It's a different issue.
Oh, okay.
So if at some point, when is the science night?
It is April 1st. So we have time.
So we have time to just take
real
a look
quick
at that,
yes.
So we're not.
Most certainly, definitely.
Going with the policy.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that and
go on.
But in the event, if you're interested, reach out. We are going to get clarification. So at least if we are above and know we're good to go ahead, you at least have that information. Mm-hmm. Any other old business?
So resource officer, and I know this has been a discussion for quite some time, and I think before you might know we had some sort of commitment to have the discussion and have information presented. So just wondering where that stood at this point.
Yeah, they, with regrets, they had to reschedule. I had Clinton Township offer to come and speak with us at a work session to talk about their shared services resource officer program. I know that the board had some questions specific to what a resource officer would do. And so those questions can be best answered by the police department and the resource officers. They were going to be coming tonight. They had a conflict in their schedule, so they will come out to our April meeting for questions that we may have, and you can hear that information firsthand from them.
Any other old business? Moving on to new business. We covered the tuition receiving students, possible tuition rates. Thank you.
I went to the Hunterdon County ESC meeting as their rep this past week. It was really interesting. I really wasn't aware of what they did. The facility is beautiful. They have kind of moved away from delivering dealing with students themselves, and they are trying to be more facilitators for school districts. And so they talked about some of the programs that they offered. They run our buses, they give us some other things. But they also wanted to make a point of saying that we could bring field trips there and we can go there and use their facilities. And they have a part of a vet tech program with the county. It was very neat to go. So if anybody is interested, they have a website with a lot of information, and I was really impressed with the stuff that they provided, and they gave dinner, so food is good.
Thank you, and thank you for being a representative. Mm-hmm. Seeing no one else?
On several occasions, members of the public have received information and members of the board haven't. So written statements that have been put on the website or sent out to parents. It's quite embarrassing when this happens, when they're getting information and we're not. I mean, a significant event happened last week where an MOA was signed and a phone wasn't picked up, right, to call the other board members to say, hey, this happened. And there was no correspondence to us. But there was correspondence to parents and something put on the website. And I know I spoke with you about this, and I was just curious about what we're going to do so that board members stay in touch, because it's embarrassing and it shouldn't happen.
No, and I understand, and I did apologize. And I also shared my feelings of I wish you had told me the first time it occurred, not waited till the third time. But
I was kind of hoping you would fix it, like, between that point in time, but since it didn't, I picked up the phone and I called you.
And I do appreciate that, but again, I can't always tell you, I can't always fix what I don't know is necessarily broken. So if I know something is broken, I can try and fix it. If I don't know something's broken, I can't fix it. So thank you for bringing it to my attention. I did send it out to all the board members. My plan is to see if I can possibly include all the board members when I send it to Dr. Cohn to send out, so that it goes to you guys before it even goes out to the district. Does that seem like it would fit?
It works.
If that would, yes.
I have a couple of other things. So I'm just a little confused. In January, you had read a statement, Lana, that said this is a statement from the board. And then in the recent statement that you sent out to parents on the top, it said a statement from the Board of Education. Did we talk about approving that statement, or did we talk about that statement?
I believe it said it was from the negotiations.
It says Clinton Township Board of Education and Clinton Township Education Association joint statement, not and so it's not a statement from the board because we didn't discuss it and vote on it. So I just, we should be cautious in what we're
publishing. No, I will be much.
Because it's misleading the public, and I'm not sure it's quite lawful either. There's another topic. I know that you are meeting with a superintendent every week, and which is curious if you could report out to the board exactly what you're talking about, because I guess there's all these discussions that are happening, and we're not sure exactly what the topics are, how the topics are getting there, how it's moving forward, and so discussions are happening, and the full board's not being informed, and so I don't know if you can do a weekly summary of what your discussions were, but I feel like we're sort of left out in the dark where we don't know exactly why you're going in there, the content, how you're getting the content, and what direction. So if we can get sort of like an understanding of what that is on a weekly basis, I think that would be helpful.
Can I ask previous presidents, how often would they meet with superintendents?
Not very often at all.
So not weekly or
no?
How often would they call them?
Well, mostly when the superintendent would call us, and then if it was something pertinent, we would get a call out, but everything was reported out in the executive session that we ever talked about. So, but we're not getting anything. So I'm just asking if you're going to have discussions, if we could just get an idea of what those things are and where the content is. That's all.
That's all.
That's all. It's just simple.
Can I just respond to that? I mean, we met to talk about the agenda. So you're seeing the results of those discussions was how do we understand the agenda? I'm not sure if you're implying that there's something other nefarious that's going on.
I have no idea what you're talking about. So if it's
how,
just
how
the
else
agenda,
are we supposed to coordinate the agenda if we don't meet with the superintendent?
All I'm saying is it about the agenda? I didn't know it was just about the agenda. So I'm just asking for some feedback to understand, because it gets reported out of having these meetings on a weekly basis, but we have agendas come out twice a month, and yet meetings are happening on a weekly basis.
I wouldn't necessarily say they're weekly
basis.
Trying
to understand, is it the only thing you're talking about is the agenda, Ms. Brendan? Is it the only thing you're talking about is the agenda?
We're getting updates on student, what's the word for student?
Concerns.
Student concerns that until we are allowed to, we can't share out. So I can most certainly get something if you want to update then, or
is
that everyone?
Great, so that we can be informed on what's going on a little bit better. Thank you.
Okay, so we are going on to move on to the second recognition of the public. If anyone in the audience would like to address the board, please come up to the microphone and state your name and address. Each person will have up to 3 minutes. We will attempt to answer all questions. However, in the event that we are unable to answer them immediately, we will follow up with answers. This comment section will be limited to 30 minutes.
Judy Hammond, Clinton Township Middle School Principal. I'm sure you're very aware that we are very excited to present Cinderella on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of this week. Thursday, sessions start at, no, shouldn't say sessions. Thursday's presentation starts at 7 o'clock, as does on Friday, and on Saturday it's 2 o'clock. So we hope you and everybody in the, oh, everybody's gone. Those remaining in the audience will come and attend. The students have been so busy, and it's truly remarkable, so we hope you will join us. Thank you.
Thank you, Judy. Okay, seeing none anymore, we're going to move on to the executive session. Okay. Yep.
Whereas the Senator Byron M. Baer Open Public Meetings Act, NJSA 10:4-6, requires all meetings of the Clinton Township Board of Education to be held in public. NJSA 10:4-12b sets forth 9 types of matters that may lawfully be discussed in executive session, i.e. without the public being permitted to attend. And whereas the Clinton Township Board of Education has determined that the following issues are permitted by NJSA 10:4-12b to be discussed without the public in attendance and shall be discussed during an executive session. Whereas the nature of the matters to be discussed, reviewed, or heard before the board, detailed as specifically as possible without undermining the need for confidentiality, pursuant to NJSA 18A:37-13.2 et sec, shall include matters subject to attorney-client privilege, personnel, and collective bargaining negotiations. And whereas the length of the executive session is estimated to be 90 minutes, after which the meeting shall reconvene and proceed with business where an action may be taken. Okay, we are also, subject matter may include, I'm sorry, say again. Pending or anticipated litigation. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Clinton Township Board of Education will go into executive session for the above stated reasons. Be it further resolved that the board hereby declares that its discussion of the aforementioned subject will be made public at such time as the reason for confidentiality no longer exists.
Thank you. Looking for a motion. Second.
Second.
I'll call back. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? We are now going into executive session. It is 9:38. Looking for a motion to reconvene public session.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstentions? Motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We adjourned at 11:44.